and Rona Brown, who are sisters.
Are we?
Right. Now,
what do you want to know?
When did you move to Ludham?
1918.
And why did you come here?
Well, because father came up and he bought the practice up here and was the doctor of Ludham for some time. Is that right?
Yes, keep Rona. Yep.
Well, I came up, I was 9 years old, and we came up on the 1st of July, and I remember coming and looking at the garden and looking at the river, which was in the garden, our own private river, and it was so exciting to me, I thought, I've never lived before.
That's about true. I was disgusted because I left my lovely school that I liked so much in Bournemouth High School, and all my friends and everything, and we had to come up because of the war, and they were afraid of an invasion or anything if I would left down there. So they brought me up here against my will.
So it must have been quite a contrast for you two coming up from Cranbourne,
Dorset,
to Ludham.
Absolutely.
Which was a far more remote sort of village, I would think,
absolutely,
in those days.
It's exactly the same now as it was then.
Oh, it isn't, not really.
Or very rarely.
It was lovely then because I was only nine and I had been rather an unhealthy child. So my father, who was a doctor, said she should go wild for a whole year. And then I thought, going wild on that lovely river in this gorgeous garden, oh, it was heaven.
And the social setup in Ludham would be very different to what it was in Cranbourne, where there were so many members of the aristocracy living.
I know, yes, it was. We had lots of tennis parties and things which we enjoyed. And of course the river, that was a great treat to us. We had various old boats that we acquired gradually. And I went on the water a lot myself, and we had lots of visitors staying with us, you know, friends and relations. We used to take them on the water too, and not frightfully exciting, but just nice.
Who were your circle of friends in the Ludham area in those days?
Well, I'm trying to think. Not
many.
Yes,
we didn't have many, did we?
Got friendly with the young Boardmans. They were sort of our age group. And
of course, our father was a doctor, and in those days, a doctor was very, very different from a doctor of today. He had to do it entirely to himself. He made up his medicines himself, and he had a radius of about 6 miles all the way round, and very little money, and that was the operative word.
Money didn't bother us much.
Oh, money didn't bother us a hoot.
Really didn't.
But it'd be nice to have had a bit more.
Yeah.
But we had most terrible old boats because we couldn't afford more. I know we had a motorboat which, when you wound it up with a handle, it used to backfire, and it nearly killed me once. It nearly broke my wrist when I was going for a music exam the next day. It was just all right, though.
You remember better than I do.
Oh, yes, I remember that very well.
Yeah.
It was very painful. And the thing was that if, you see, my father, being a doctor, if we went on holiday, in those days you had to pay for the locum and you paid for his board and lodging, which made it damned expensive. And so what we used to do, having a house on the river, we used to let the house because we could get quite a good price for it because it was on the river, and we used to let the house. And one day, while it was let, we had some great friends, Stuart Boardman, who they lived up in the big house on the hill, and he was very matey with us. He used to just walk in the front door, and the front door was always open in those days. Nobody had a key for anything. And he came in, apparently, one day, and in the hall we had a gong, which we used to ring before a meal. And so he came in and banged this gong, walked into the sitting room, and found some strange people there because we'd let the house.
Why he didn't know about it, I don't know.
Very odd. Must have been rather a shock for him. However, he and the people were mates forevermore.
So your father had quite an interesting old car to travel round his practice in.
When he started?
Oh, yes. Mm. He came up in an old Swift, which was born in 1908
six.
Or 9?
Six.
Six, 1906.
I think it was.
And it hadn't got any doors. It was a two-seater, no dicky or anything like that. A two-seater, no doors, and A passenger went out with him. The other person sat on the where the door would be in a modern in a modern car.
On the floor.
And I often used to sit there. And after about 2 years after, I think it was about 2 years after we came, he went out one day, and when he got to near Potterheim Bridge, I think it was, this suddenly...
The steering went.
The steering absolutely went, and he was left practically falling over into the river. Not quite, though, luckily. And he always said, if I'd been sitting there on the little side bit, it would have gone over. So it was lucky.
Your father had quite an interesting start to his career as a doctor, because he didn't set off with that in mind.
Well, that's, yes. You mean say he went into an office to begin with?
Yes.
Story I told you there, in on the other tape. Well, yes, that didn't last very long, because he played about a bit. But eventually he trained as a doctor.
Yes, but while he was there, for a very short time, he was in an office of a...
They were shipbrokers. Yes.
And he had to do bills of lading with diamonds on.
I'm glad you tell
me. And he got a bit tired of these diamonds, so he said, oh, we'll have a few hearts, or diamonds, or spades, or something for a change. And... Go on.
Have I got to tell the rest?
Yeah.
Well, the boss had him into the office and said, the boss, I might tell you, was a friend of the family. That's how he got into the office. And he said, I think, my boy, we haven't enough scope here for you. So, of course, he went, and eventually he got what he wanted and was allowed to train at the London Hospital as a doctor. And there we are.
He trained on about 12 and sixpence in those days a week.
I thought it was 10 bob.
No, 12 and sixpence.
Oh.
And he lived. He hadn't got any money for anything except just living. And he had a landlady who... He always kept a bottle of whiskey for medicinal purposes.
Literally.
And the lady of the man, lady of the house, apparently thought, this is rather nice. So when he was out, she used to drink it. So one day he put some...
I don't know what the stuff was.
Something
that made them go quickly.
Yes, a little bit of powder, something in it. And she was rather disgusted next day. She said, what have you done? You know, I've been up early at the loo. stayed there all day. Anyway, that was the end of her using his whiskey.
So from there he moved on to a practice in Dorset.
Well, not quite. He had to go. He went to a hospital. They used to have to walk the wards or something they used to do in those days. I mean, we're talking about the turn of the century. And he went to Yarmouth Hospital to walk the wards.
Was it walk the wards? I can't remember what it was called.
That was it. Go on.
Yes.
The story of the...
Well, then, do you want the story of the...
Yes.
First and last? Well, one day he wanted to go over to Capule, so he cycled, but... But when he got as far as the first and last pub, he came off his bike and scraped his knee very badly. And so he went in there, and there was an old girl there who said, oh, yes, you must have that washed up. And she did it for him, and she said, oh, I don't think you ought to go back to the hospital and have that seen to properly. You go and ask for Dr. Brown. I hear he's a very good doctor. My daughter's a nurse there and tells me this. He said, all right, well, I will.
I hope he did.
Yeah. Don't know whether he did or not. Don't know what happened.
And then
hear the end of these stories, do you, really?
After his work in the Yarmouth Hospital, he then found his next practice in Dorset, was it?
Yes, yeah, somebody told him that they wanted a doctor down there very badly. They wanted a decent doctor down there very badly. And he had two promises of a loan for a practice.
He had no money.
But he hadn't, he had to borrow. And one was his brother-in-law, but when he decided to marry, because they were going to wait a bit, my mother and father, for a bit, but then they decided that as he was coming out of nowhere, it'd be a good thing to come to as a married man and not a bachelor, you see. That was just their idea. And this put the old boy off. He said, oh, well, if you're going to get married, I'm not going to
Shouldn't marry at your young age.
Then somebody else said they would. And when they came to visit, when they met, I don't know how they met these two, but anyway, my father found that he was a bit batty. He didn't know what he was doing at all. So all that fell through, and So he just went down and put his plate up.
Which they had £100 in the bank.
Yes, that's right. They put a. They had.
Of course, £100 in 1902 was. Well, a lot of money.
What you haven't said is my mother got her trousseau out of it, which was probably only the wedding dress, which was not a white
suit.
Business, it was a suit. And they bought the linen for the house too. I mean, all that came out of it. And then they sat down and
waited
till somebody came and see them, to see them as a patient.
Well, you better tell the next
bit. You want the next bit too about
yes,
it?
Yes.
Oh, well, one day a Daimler car came into the village, which there were no cars about at all then, and it was chauffeur driven, and it had a collision with a local bicycle. And so they brought the man in to the surgery to see my father. And, well, apparently he wasn't very badly hurt. But the owner of the car was the lord of the manor of the... and he owned most of the village too, the houses and the village and everything like that. And that's how he met up with... it was Lord Salisbury, actually. And after that he became a patient, which was very, you know... good for his
prestige
and starting in the life. That's all there is to that story, I think.
Yes, and as a result of that, he obviously met lots more well-connected people in Cranbourne.
Well, there were an awful lot round there, you see. Oh, they were crowded out with large
full of
houses.
Nobility, wasn't it?
Yes.
Very snobby.
So why did he move from Cranbourne to Ludham?
Well, it was a better practice. That was the answer to that. And, I mean, he got a family that he was educating then, you know what I mean? And his aunts were up here. I mean, not his aunts, his sisters and his brother. They lived up here. And, just that
his
was
father
the connection.
Had,
and his father was
His
the,
father had been the
rector.
Rector of Catfield, which is only, as you know, 2 or 3 miles away. For years and years and years.
Well, he wasn't there then, but there was a connection.
Yes, but he had been, so it was coming back to where he knew.
He was born in Dillham anyway.
Yes.
So he would have taken over the practice from Dr. Gordon.
Yes.
Whom you probably knew quite well.
Yes.
Yes.
Quite.
Do tell us more.
What, about Dr. Gordon?
Yes.
Oh, dear. God.
Well, I don't know. I didn't take to Dr. Gordon very much.
He lived at the Ludham Manor.
Yes, yes. Yes, I haven't got anything bad to say about him. I wouldn't like him as my doctor, that's all I can say. But...
can you?
I don't know.
Have be up when a person is dead?
No.
Bad things
no.
about them?
Well, I haven't got any really bad things
well,
to
I
say
think
about
taking
him.
Taking somebody's eye out of the
Oh, that?
Penknife.
Well, he didn't take his eye out. He took something out of his eye.
In a penknife?
Yes. Well, that I've been told lately up here that...
Well, that sounds absolutely horrible.
That he had this old boy had something in his eye, and he went to the doctor about it, and he got out his penknife, said, "Oh, we'll soon put that right." It was a bombastic old so and so, and he used his penknife without
anything
disinfectant
more.
Or anything.
Well, I wouldn't have a penknife anyway.
No, but out of his pocket, you know.
Yeah.
Come on, another question.
So he must have travelled about the village in a pony and trap, did he, or? To his patients before the motor car?
I should think he must have, I really
You're talking about Dr. Gordon?
Yes.
Oh, he would have.
I should think so. I think he must have, because I don't think he had a car that I know of. He couldn't drive a car.
No.
That I do know.
Yeah. And of course, in those days, being a doctor in a country practice was very unlike today, with our sort of up-to-date modern surgery with numerous doctors and assistants.
Oh, yes.
And he made up all his own... medicines, all in bottles and things like that.
And if he was frequently called out of church.
And at night a lot. Terrible lot.
I mean, he was the one doctor, that's all there was.
In those days, a doctor brought practically all the little babies into the world. Now they go to hospital. But he brought practically the whole of Ludham into the world in those days. And they always came in the middle of the night. Don't ask me why, but they did.
I can see the reason.
And then I suppose he travelled to other villages like Catfield,
Hickling. He had a surgery at Hickling, a surgery room, you know. He used to go regularly once a week or twice a week, I can't
once
remember.
Once a week, I think.
Once a week. And then he went as far as Horsted.
I was going to say he had an odd patient right out at Horsted.
Oh, yes, he had a patient at Horsted. He used to visit every day at her request. And
not every day, was it?
I think so, every day, or no, jolly nearly every day.
I think that's...
And eventually she was dying of cancer, and she died, and he had to send the bill to the executors. And he sent a bill for every day, 5 shillings a visit. And he had to go quite a lot of miles to get there.
Well, you know where Horsted
and
is.
And they complained.
Well,
I'm glad to say he won. Can you believe it?
Yes.
And of course, in those days, there was no such thing as a surgery at your house.
No, no.
People queued.
I know, they complain about it nowadays, but they didn't have the money we had and anybody else had. I don't know what other doctors did round about, much the same thing. You see, they didn't use the surgery an awful lot, because my father went round seeing people.
Yes.
I mean, there's much more of that. There's much more surgery now. The other way around, I think.
Yes, because in those days people hadn't got the transport to travel to the doctors if they weren't well.
No, exactly. I've often thought we might have made one of the garages into one, you know, put a window in and made one. I think we really should have done so, perhaps, but...
Well, not in those days.
You see, the days are so different. I mean, nowadays it couldn't be. It so often happens, I mean.
You see, he went on working. The war came, and so he couldn't give up then, because he was beginning to get rather old by then. But
well, he was just going to give up when the war came.
Yes, the war came, so he had to stay on, and he eventually gave up practice in 1948, just before the National Health came in. He was very pleased to do it. He said, National Health, sir, I'm not going to be looked after by the government. I'm going to do what I like, you know.
Well,
he was like that. He wasn't going to be bombarded by the national insurance and all that sort of tomfoolery.
I don't think he'd like to be told what to do.
He wouldn't, no. He wasn't made that way.
But things are quite different now in any case. I mean, just they are completely different. So there we are. Isn't that the end of the school?
No, no. When we first came up in the 1st of July 1918, of course, the First World War was still on. And there was practically no cars or anything on the road, practically none. And so I was only 9, and my sister was 15.
Coming up 15.
And we were allowed to go on bicycles all over the place, which I don't suppose you would be allowed now in with all the traffic around.
Yes, it was a totally different
world in those days.
Entirely
yes.
different.
You
yes.
could roam
yes.
freely without the concerns of
yes.
being run over.
And then we used to go out in the boat all together without, well, separately sometimes, without anybody else. I mean, nobody sort of bothered at
and
the age of 9.
We could sail a boat.
We could sail a boat.
These ruddy motorboats all the time.
It was lovely on the Broads then, because there were practically no boats except sailing boats. Not an awful lot of them, but quite a few. And, you know, you could sail with impunity. It was lovely.
We're talking about after the war now.
Well, just after, yes. Between the wars we're talking about. We're talking about the First World War towards the Second World War.
Yes.
Not the Second World War.
No.
Did you know Florence Boardman very well?
What, the old girl?
Yes.
The old girl. Yes, we knew
her. Car attendant.
Yes, we knew them very well. We used to go up there and...
Your father was
the
doctor to the
Boardman. Yes, he was, definitely. Yes, I never thought of her as Florence Boardman, I know she is, but yes, all the young people you see, as I say, were more or less my age, and we saw quite a lot of them.
What about village people? Did you get to know village people very well?
Yes, I used to know quite a lot of the village people then, so I say, if I go up the road now, I think they're all in the churchyard. I don't know many people in Ludham now. I know a lot to talk to, but I don't know who they are.
You'd have known old Sam Knights, the harness maker.
Oh, yes, I remember him quite well.
Mm. And his son, Albert.
Oh, certainly. It's old Albert that apparently said to Leela Goldsmith, she was Potter Hire, said to her one day, they said, Dr. Brown's time, you could have a doctor, you could... have him any time, but now you can't be ill at the weekends, and you can't be ill on Sundays. No. You could be any time in his time.
It's true.
It's not, well, semi-true. It's not really true, but, I mean, it was amusing. I mean, you do get a doctor. They're
yes.
on duty, but...
yes, he was...
They frown upon Saturdays and Sundays a little, don't they?
he was very, very much a character of Ludham, Albert.
Yes.
Anyone else you remember from those days?
Well, I remember the Powells, the shop that, you know, Mrs. Powell got shot up by the German bullet in the war. She was killed. Did you know
the
Powells at the shop there, where the butcher is now?
Perhaps you could say more about that story.
Well, she was. They were having lunch, I think, and somebody said she was just passing the potatoes round, you know, mashed potatoes round to the people, you know, having their meal. And this plane came over and it came through the window, the bullet, and got her right in the heart, so they say. And nearly got her daughter as well, only the daughter had turned round to see what the noise was, you see. And so it just scraped across here. It didn't really hurt her, except to give her a superficial wound.
Did your father have to attend the pilot who crashed during the war?
No, he didn't.
I suppose they had a military doctor.
I should think so. He was called out sometimes when the RAF doctor was on leave, or not leave, on going out for the day or anything. Every now and then they'd call him up and a WAF would come and take him down there. He loved that. And he was taken down to the airfield in case anything happened. And one day he had one of these fortresses had came down, you know, a forced landing. And the poor man had both his hands blown off. Of course, my father did them up and sent him to hospital once, but, you know, terrible thing, I think that was. I don't know if that was the pilot. It was one of the crew, anyway.
So, do you remember the wartime in Ludham very well?
Not too
Which
terrible.
War are you talking
the
about?
Second war.
Oh, second war.
Oh,
yes.
That thing.
Yes. Well, we were out of the village, but we had a lot of the RAF or army used to come and have a bath when they liked, which they loved having. At our place, they could come and go as they liked, leave the things as they wanted to and so on. And I had a WAF who literally made it her, you might say, home from home. She'd leave her mufti there and she'd come and go when she liked and had a key, you know, and I'm still friendly with her. And that was very nice, you know, we enjoyed that.
That was when you were at Red Roof's farm?
Yes, Red Roof Farm.
Red Roof, what year did you have that built?
Just before the war. We reckoned that if we hadn't had a good, we had Taylor's or Roxham at the time, and if we hadn't had it, you know, really,
Get going.
Somebody who was big enough, they wouldn't have kept it going. They'd have put a tarpaulin over it and we'd have had it after the war. Instead of that, they got it done. So we had it done just in time, which was very nice for us.
And you ran a fruit farm there for many years.
Mm, yes, for about, 20 years, was it, Renna? You always work these things out and think of something like that. But during the war, yes, we... there was something I was going to say about it, I can't remember now. But
there was a lovely story of my mother used to, during the war at Riverside, she used to take in the sort of, was it the...
The wives and
mothers of the people in the Air Force and things down on the field. And she had one man, he was the padre, wasn't he?
Yes.
And he used to come in. And he was so used to it, he used to walk up the back stairs and just walk into the bathroom to have a bath, you see. Well, one day, it was one of these old-fashioned baths, you know, a bit mucky-looking, and she'd had it thoroughly enamelled. It wasn't quite dry. And he walked up the back stairs and went and had a bath. You can imagine the rest.
Well, we won't
go into details.
Oh, no. Oh, dear. Yeah. I was going to say, I had an evacuee, too. We only had three bedrooms, and we had this evacuee. My husband was the billeting officer, and they wrote to us and said, we're going to send you mothers with their small children. I said, I'm not having a mother here with her small children. I'll have the small children, or I'll have the mother, but I'm not going to have them together. So Ken said... said, that's not very useful for me. I said, well, I can't help it. I'm just not going to. I can see them saying, dear little things can make marks on your wall, and I'm not going to have them. Anyway, we went over to Stalham to make a collection, And he came out from the hall and he said, "Well, there's one nice mother there, a mother there, she looks a nice girl, and she's got a babe in arms. Would you mind that?" I said, "No." He said, "She's got a nice hat anyway. We always remember that." And that made us, I mean, he never bothered about clothes a lot, did he, really? I mean, I don't know why he suddenly thought of that. She was a very attractive girl.
Sweet girl, yeah.
And anyway, I said, "Oh, that's all right. I don't mind that." And we got on fine with her. She was terribly sweet. We saw her again last year, didn't
yes,
we?
Yes, yes, in
and,
London.
And she's, you know, it was very nice having her. And she was very helpful. And then we had... Then one day a naval officer, he was rather attractive too, he came to the door and said, had we got room to put him up, you see, and his wife when she could come down. Oh, I said, "I think we're full." And I thought, well, he's rather nice. And in the end we said, "All right, if I can get my woman to come and help a bit more," I said, "we'll have you. Otherwise I don't think we can manage it because I'm already full up." And I asked the woman, and I can't remember her name now. She always said, that's right. Anyway, I saw "that's right," and said, "Can you come extra?" And she said, yes, she could. When I fixed it all up, she came up to me and she said, "My husband says he doesn't want me to work anymore." So I said, "You mean, so you're not coming at all?" "No, sorry." So I thought, well, that's nice, isn't it? I haven't got her extra, I haven't got her at all. Anyway, Selma, the
other evacuee
said, "Well, can't we manage between us, you see?" And she said she'd do a certain amount and we'd arrange the work between us. And so that's how we managed. Mm,
sadly, he's dead.
Mm. Yep, there we are.
He walked in his sleep. Am I right?
Yes.
He walked in his sleep and he walked to his death in his sleep. Mm. Not with Nita. Dreadful though, isn't it? Mm. Anyway, don't let's dwell on that.
No. Well, that's it. That's
oh, well, that's fine.
Haven't you got the end of that film yet?
No, it does three quarters of an hour.